Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Apuy, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. And now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
You are listening to Bahama Rumba, played by Marshall Washington Cabinus Apuy for your listening entertainment.
Thank you.
Well, good evening. Good evening, everyone, and welcome again to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum on this last weekend of August of 2021. And this has been a spectacular month in many ways, and it's not over yet. There's more to come, but we definitely are glad that you've joined us this evening for this program. We began our show with a slight rendition that you had asked for, saxophone solo called Bahama Rumba. And perhaps we may entertain you again in a similar fashion in the next program on next Saturday. We're working on a few things. That's just one of our simple compositions that we worked on since we talked with you last Saturday. And we wanted to get it out to you so you could enjoy it. And we hope you did enjoy it, Bahama Rumba. But we will be working on some more things that we certainly hope that you will find pleasure in listening to as we develop our repertoire on the alto sax. But we thank everyone who has joined us tonight, and we're going to begin our program as we always do with getting a radio check from our co-host. We want to welcome our co-host, Mr. Bianchi, and we also want to welcome Sheikh John Kennebay and Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, who have already joined us. But Mr. Bianchi, welcome to the show, and just for a quick radio check, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time, though. I'm having a hard time. My feet started jumping when I heard that sax. Maybe if I weigh them down with something.
Oh, boy, I tell you, you kill me. you're so up there, man. I tell you, man, you need to help me come down because you just made me go up to the clouds. But we're going to do better. We got some things, you know, in our lineup that we're going to work on to entertain you. I've told you before, I'm a big fan of John Coltrane and Gene Ammons.
Oh, Wes Montgomery.
Wes is a guitar player, and I'm mostly into the saxophonist, but I may listen to some of his tunes.
Wait a minute, now Wes Montgomery play, who's going to play the saxophone, Bumping on Sun Street?
I don't know. Wes was one of my favorite guitar players. Now, don't get me wrong, I like Wes's music, but I'm really trying to copy some of the 1960s sax players. And
I tell you, somebody
would
do it. Remember that guy that played with Bruce Springsteen, the big guy?
I don't remember.
Clemens was his name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I may remember that name. Yeah. But there's a lot of stars. I mean, you found, you know, since the 1930s and 40s, there have been some spectacular sax players, black and white. Paul Desmond, for one. But one of my other favorites is a black musician by the name of Stan Getz. You may be
familiar. I've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. No, wait. Well, Stan, I think Stan was white. Who am I thinking about? Yeah, Stan was white. So Paul Desmond and Stan Getz were both white. But then you had Sonny Stitt, which was right around the time of Coltrane. And there was a bunch of them. But I personally have decided to focus on Coltrane and Gene Ammons. One reason I love Gene is because a lot of the stuff he played is easy for me to play because it's slow. And it's easy for me to be able to roll with the more slower tunes at this stage of my playing. But one place I probably never go is to Charlie Parker, although I like Charlie's music. And he was an alto saxophonist, which is what I do right now, although I hope to graduate by next year. I hope to graduate to the tenor sax. But it's just a lot easier to play the sax because it's a lighter instrument and it's more comfortable to hold on to because I don't have to stand up to play it. That's my main reason, is just that I like to kick back in my lazy boy rocker while I play. But anyway, to get on with the show, let me just go ahead and welcome everybody again, and also to let everyone know that is listening via the Internet that we welcome your participation. And I haven't chosen a particular topic for tonight. I've just decided to make a caller's choice. So anyone that has something on your mind, we invite you to come on. We ask you to just
restrict your beginning comments to no more than 3 minutes so other people can join us and we can hear what they have to say as well. So if you have something, if you're listening via the internet that you would like to say, something you'd like to get off your chest, something that's been on your mind and you've just been looking for an audience for it, this is the audience. We are going to listen to you. Like I say, please don't take any more than 3 minutes to make your initial statement so other people can speak. But we invite everybody that wants to come in to the family room to do so. The number to call is 657-383-0671. Again, 657-383-0671. So, again, this is caller's choice, but I do have something that is on my mind, but we don't have to go round and round about it. We don't have to talk about it, but I just found out, you know, checking the news before we came on the air, that over 100 and approximately 17,000 Afghanis have been, in the last couple of weeks, have been evacuated from Afghanistan to head in the direction of the United States. They've been, some of them have been actually offloaded in other places like Qatar, some in Germany, for further vetting, in some cases for getting food and being able to use facilities. But ultimately, the plan is for them to debark in the United States at some point and to be dispersed to military bases that are being ramped up so they can accommodate these people. One of them is up there on the large base where the FBI does its training. It's a very large reservation. I've never been there, but I understand that not only the FBI, but also the Marine Corps does training up there, and that's Quantico in Virginia. Another place in Virginia that I have visited is Fort Lee, Virginia. They do a lot of transportation, what I would say support training up at Fort Lee. And then also Fort Dix, where they do the basic training, at least they have historically done basic training. So that's pretty a large facility. And then there are a number of others. Fort Bliss, Texas is another one, and so forth. Now, my point is this. In the next couple of days, unless something miraculous happens, we're going to see some devastating damage in the New Orleans, Louisiana area, or the coast area of Louisiana, from what the meteorologists are predicting. The winds are going to be Category 4 hurricane winds, unless they drastically reduce in the next 48 hours. And, you know, Katrina was a Category 5, I believe, and we can remember, those of us, you know, that think back to that point in time, how devastating that was. In fact, one of the neighborhoods that I was actually the grand marshal of a community parade in the Ninth Ward, there's a school, probably doesn't exist anymore, but it was named Booker T. Washington Vocational High School. It was one of the centerpieces in that neighborhood, and that neighborhood was completely inundated with water during Katrina. Many of those homes had to be torn down, and people had to be relocated. Something similar may happen again in the next few days in New Orleans. We can only pray that it doesn't, but my point is this. The government of the United States has already made it known that the government has the facilities on these military bases to temporarily house hundreds of thousands of refugees, hundreds of thousands of people from Afghanistan that are fleeing for what they consider to be their lives from the Taliban rule in Afghanistan. How serious that threat is to them, I don't know, but they've begged and they've gotten paperwork to be able to get to the United States seeking safety. Now, here's the deal. There are going to be hundreds of thousands of people that are going to probably need temporary housing, food and water supplies, et cetera, in the next few days, the next week or two, or maybe longer, if this hurricane hits with the force that's predicted down there in the New Orleans and the southern Louisiana area. So I'm asking myself, is FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, in coordination with the Department of Defense and other agencies, are they making any plans to be able to evacuate those people, to take them to some military bases temporarily so that they can be taken care of, expense of the government? Of course, the state of Louisiana and other states that are affected, you know, they can pay for some of this. But I'm just saying, if the United States can bring in all these people from overseas that we feel that we are obligated to help because they helped us, can't we take care of our own people? I'll just turn it over to Ms. Bianchi. If you want to respond to that, that's fine. But if you don't, that's fine, too. I just wanted to.
Well, good evening to everyone. That. And my feet settled down a little bit, but I think I can make it through this.
Okay, all right.
But see, here's the thing. Now, I can understand the translators, but you didn't have no 100,000 translators. What was the maximum number of troops we ever had in Afghanistan? Do you remember, Mr. Washington?
I can't remember, but I believe we had, now this is just a wild guess, but I believe we had up to about 20,000 troops over there at one time. I'm not going to say for sure. I can go on the internet and find out, but I
well,
want you to
I
go
tell
ahead.
You,
cause you,
that's about what I think, too. And if you had 20,000 troops, why in the world would you need all of the equipment that has been reported that was there in their country? Tens of thousands of uniforms, 76,000 vehicles from Ford Rangers, Ford 350, vans, Toyota pickups, armored security vehicles. You had 30 military Cessna aircraft and 4C. Why would they have so much equipment? And, you know, here's the next thing, too. Why come these people that's fleeing from this feared aggression, why don't they go to adjoining states? You got Pakistan. You got Turkmenistan. You got Belarus. Iran. Why don't they send them to those states, Mr. Washington? Those people in that area are more affluent in their language, their dietary practices, and probably your religious practices also. It's just like those coming out of the southern hemisphere. They pass through countries to get to the United States. Mexico, Costa Rica, and other countries, they pass through getting to the United States. You mean to tell me that these folks walk through all those countries and don't stop off to take a nap or have a meal or rest? That's highly suspicious of me. So I would be totally against it. And Joe Biden and his administration apparently don't know what the hell they're doing. Administration looks like a box of Skittles, a bowl of Fruit Loops. And anybody that voted for him, especially blacks that was convinced by these preachers and the likes of some of your politicians, like the ones there in North Carolina, I can't think of his name, they got blood on their hands too. Because this mess is totally uncalled for. And you know what would have been better yet, and we're seeing this being worked out in Australia right now. You should have gave them weapons to the public. Australian public was required to turn in all their weapons, all their home guns, and now the police are running rampant in the city, holding them hostage, making them stay in the house, tackling them and locking them up if they haven't took the vaccination. And you think that would have been going on if they was armed? All right, I turn it over. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Scott. Ms. Peck, I just want to say one quick thing, and then we'll turn it over to Sheikh John Cannon Bay, because I'm certainly anxious to hear what he and Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali have to say. But I want to say one quick thing. The way that I understand it from reading about it is that the plan of the United States was to train an Afghan security force, in other words, an Afghani self-defense army. And so the idea was that they were turning over all of this equipment, including these military bases, to this Afghani self-defense or a national defense army. And they had trained these people supposedly in how to use these different types of equipment. Now, what happened, as we know, and of course it's been in the news, is that the Afghani National Security Force just evaporated. You know, people just decided they didn't want to fight against the Taliban. They took off their uniforms. They may have held on to their personal weapons, but they basically just decided to let the Taliban take over everything that the United States gave them. Now, what the problem I have is somebody should have seen this coming. Somebody that's involved with intelligence should have seen this coming. And we've got the CIA operating over there. We've got the FBI operating over there, because anytime you have military personnel on military base, and I know this from experience having served overseas on several occasions, you're going to have an FBI agent either right there on the base or very close by. But they also had, I just found this out today, the State Department has its own form of something similar to the CIA, which is the State Department Special Service, or Special Security Force. They train right up there at Quantico, at the FBI training school. They go through the same training that FBI agents and CIA agents, which the CIA has their own training up at Langley. But the fact is that these are highly trained, highly skilled, professional people, law enforcement agents. So some, and not only do they do like the FBI type, what I would say, law enforcement or CIA mercenary type, military, but they also do intelligence work, spying, and so forth. And I'm just surprised that nobody saw this coming, because they should have seen that the Afghani army, the National Security Force, was going to just give up. They should have seen that coming and stayed there long enough to get all of our equipment and weapons out of there instead of them being turned over to the Taliban. That's my opinion. But anyway, Sheikh John Cannon Bay, again, welcome to the show. And, you know, you heard some of my commentary. You've heard Mr. Piyaki. What do you think?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I keep thinking about the more or less the military-industrial complex. Is that the population is sort of going along with what they're being told, but there are certain common threads run through some of these wars. The Vietnam War and the one in Afghanistan. What occurred similar is that before the United States got involved, there was another country involved to Vietnam. There was French involved wanting to colonize Vietnam, want Vietnam people to live their way of life. Then after the Vietnam people resist them, and they got tired and left, the United States got involved. Well, very similar to in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, if I understand, the Russians were there first. And now, supposedly, and we had two wars going at the same time, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq. Supposedly, it was because of the terrorist attacks that coming here at home at the World Trade Center. And the culprit, supposedly, the main person, Bin Laden, who was not a Afghan citizen. He was a citizen of Saudi Arabia, but supposedly he was hiding there and the Afghans wouldn't give him up and all things of that nature. So went in there for that reason. But the Afghan people themselves, I guess it's similar to the Vietnamese people. Did they invite, you know, the French to tear their country up, or the United States to tear it up? I imagine at some point they would want peace. And Afghanistan, it's, I would assume, the same way. So we're at a point now where in they're kind of free of some of the foreign influence, and now hopefully they're able to run the government, you know, best for the people. A lot of lies, money, so forth and so on. To be honest with you, I'm a man of peace. I'd rather my tax dollars go on to help other needed situation, human needs. That's basically as I just stand on the sideline and make some comment about what is going on with these earth walls.
Okay, well, thank you very much, J. John Kennebay. Now, I won't go into any commentary on that. I think it speaks for itself. So we want to invite Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali to come on, and you've heard my commentary, Sheikh John Kennebay's commentary, and starting off with Ms. Priyanka's commentary. Would you like to add something to the discussion on this point, or maybe some other point you might want to talk about?
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very proud to be a part of the discussion this evening. And that's how they come to another amen. From the audience, not only not, you know, comment, you know, as a grandson of younger like Muhammad, also from Gaza on the south and subject really skills to, you know, the Middle East. I actually never met the Kingdom of Arabia back when I was 19 years old, so my family just had a, you know, a,
Mr. Davis, please get close to your microphone because it's kind of hard to hear you. So I'll either get closer or speak a little bit louder, please.
Yes, sir. I was going to say that, my family has been an integrated part in almost of the Muslim world, Arab Muslim world. And as I said, my own personal relationship goes so far as the fact that in 1968 I was the honored guest of the Saudi king. So, but I have a published article over the past 18 years relative to some insights when it comes to the Muslim world. You know, the only thing I want to say about the situation with the Afghanistan debacle is that America has, we as a country have found ourselves in the middle of, you know, I think Mr. Priyanka, he made a point, and I think that you yourself, Imam Abu, have alluded to it. You know, 170,000 Afghans going to be brought here into this country. You know, Brother Priyanka was saying, you know, why are they all coming here? You know, I think that seems to, this country being a democracy, a republic, you know, one man, one vote. You know, I just finished the book, and Brother Man, you're very acquainted with that. And I called attention to the fact since 1975, you know, there have been more than 3.2 million Arab-speaking people who have relocated into this country. You know, why are these people coming to this country? Yeah, I think the sense of what has been alluded to by yourself, Brother Priyanka, is why are all these people trying to, patriate themselves into this country? I think there's some level of suspicion about that, and I think that may very well be warranted. You know, that's the only thing I want to say about that. You say we only have about 3 minutes to speak, but I just want to mention that. But the fact, we're talking about how many, they have, according to the President Biden has stated that we trained 300,000 of their troops. You know, why did they just all of a sudden roll over? There was a bloodless rollover, you know, just like even they went in there originally as a military operation when it came to Osama bin Laden, who was a CIA operative originally, okay? You know, this country trained these people, okay? And then all of a sudden, you know, and they said the government itself was so corrupt, you know, so the people, you know, they just capitulated, you know, and we also have to understand who the Taliban is. Taliban means people of the book. Taliban means, kitab means just the word for book, kitab. These were really the Saudi government. There's an article that was put in the Atlantic Journal in 2003 by a former CIA operative. He was saying that the Saudi government is ruled by the royal family and also Islamic Council, about 40,000. But those Islamic Council members were actually sponsoring a million people out of Pakistan and India, a million of them a year in these what they call madrasas, and they had to go into these schools. They stay in a school for a year, and they can only study the Quran and also Hadith, which is the sayings of the Prophet. And it was these students, which, you know, even the word Al-Qaeda, which is kind of a bastardized version of what is called, what is the correct pronunciation is Al-Qaeda, which means the fabric of the faith. So, you know, the Pakistanis actually, which is number, you know, their population about 163 million, you know, the Afghans are, what, 40 million people, you know, they actually, after Russia decapitated this country, and that's when, you know, they trained Osama and they call him Mujahideen to go in there. They actually, the Congress, you know, they sponsored them to take the country from the Soviets. The Soviets killed off the entire royal family, which is 140,000. Anyway, the entire, they controlled all of the municipal offices in the country. They killed off the entire royal family. They left the power vacuum. So they sent these so-called religious students, which were a product of the Saudi, Islamic Council, having sponsored these talents, these people, these Islamic schools. So that's what they are dealing with right now. They're various radicalizations. All you got to remember something: the Saudis, you know, when Rockefeller went into Saudi Arabia in 1930 and into the ocean wall of the mass disposal, the Saudis, you know, the deal with Rockefeller cut with them that they will get an equal amount of money, 50-50 deal from the proceeds. And so as America grew and Eisenhower built the 6th and 7th fleet and everything, you know, the Saudis also grew too, you know, because they got half the money. So, and what they did with the money, you know, that's what we are dealing with, the byproduct of it, you know. So, you know, I'm saying this is a very complex, you know, situation. As we call ourselves Muslims, you know, we are called upon sometimes as citizens of this country to give insight as to what these people are really all about, okay? So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, you know, it came out in 2003. Okay, but anyway, I'm sure I went over my three minute period of time, but yeah, I think the point that your brother Pianci alluded to about why are they all these people relocating in this country? Here in Detroit, this is the largest Arab speaking community in the country. So I am extremely familiar with this, and many of the people in the academia here are extremely interested in some of the insights that I've been able to help provide because of my family's, you know, having been almost second-class citizens, you know, when it comes to the Saudis, even, you know, bringing an introduction of Islam into the acceptance of Islam in this country, but not Orthodox Islam. My grandfather did not teach Orthodox Islam. The Arab people, if you look at the movie Lawrence of Arabia, Arab people, because of their secularism, they have been what they call a cruel and barbaric, people, you know, really, you know, so much separatism, they're so divided, you know what I mean? But anyway, that's a whole new subject in and of itself. But I'm just going to retire, you know, at this point. But, you know, as we called our Senate, Muslims, what we were told Islam was freedom, justice, and equality. Freedom, justice, and equality, it seems to be a very, liberal, idealistic notion, freedom, justice, and equality. As far as these women, see, women are considered to be the trophies, you know, and they're the bearers, you know, of the culture. They're the bearers of the children. You know, they're the fruits and nurturers. So they go after the women, okay, and the dress code. I mean, why is women's liberation, you know, seem to be looked at, you know, as one and the same when it comes to the morality of a people? I mean, women are extremely intelligent. As a matter of fact, one of the things the Prophet Muhammad said, that if a man educates two of his daughters, he's guaranteed that he will go to paradise. So all of this stuff about oppressing women, that's not really true. You know, they got, you know, educating women, but, you know, but true women bear the burden because they're dressed so men, but this, none of that has to do with, they say if a person is responsible, if you leave $100, you know, say you want to walk out of the room, you know, people who are important, you're the burden of enticement. That's why the women's dress code has a lot to do with what they consider to be, you know.
Yes, sir. Mr. Jesus, can I interrupt you? We're going to come back to you. But I've got to stop the show right at 9 o'clock because I have to make my evening prayer and it's going to go out shortly after 9. So let me do this. We're going to go back around. We're going to go back to Mr. Pianchi and then Sheikh John Cannon Bay, give both of them a chance to make comment before the time runs out. Then I'll come back to you and you, if you would like, can conclude that theme you're talking about right now, because I'm very interested in hearing your opinion about it, and I'm sure others are as well. And also I want to go ahead and make this announcement to our Internet listeners. We only have about 15 minutes left, so any who are listening via the Internet, if you would like to have your opinions heard on this or any subject, please call us at 657-383-0671. So, Mr. Jesus, we're going to come back to you, so keep that thought, and we're going to be listening very intently when you do come back on so we can hear the conclusion of that. But this time we want to go back to Mr. Pianchi, and then we're going to go around so we can get everybody in before we have to close. So, Mr. Pianchi, would you like to go ahead and expand on your comment or maybe even talk about something?
Well, on the thing... thing with the Taliban is not a country. Taliban is warlords of different provinces that exist in the country of Afghanistan. After 9/11, when the United States successfully tracked down those that was involved in that, and probably under some agreements with the government, they entered in what was called a 10-year, one-day commitment. And the Taliban agreed to not fight for 10 years and one day, as the Quran states. You enter into a commitment like that with your enemy. The enemy wasn't necessarily the United States. The enemy was the president of the country because he was Christian. They hate Christians. In 2011, they extended it for one more commitment. Another 10-year, one day, which would have required the U.S. to leave by May of 2020. 2021. Now, Donald Trump has made that negotiation, that agreement, but Joe Biden refused, and we are where we are today. You know, it's another thing, too, to come to mention over there in that area, and that's the Caspian Sea. The Caspian Sea has large supplies of natural gas and oil. And as it applies, not as it goes now, the countries that surround the sea is more or less entitled to those resources. That would be Russia, Iran, Turkmenistan, and I believe Kazakhstan, but I'm not sure. And they had proposed for the longest, they have proposed pipelines that would run through from the sea, from Turkmenistan through Afghanistan to Pakistan on down into the Arabian Sea. Now, the thing, Mr. Washington, about going through Afghanistan, you don't deal with one government like the president of the country who was elected by the people. You deal with each one of those warlords because you're going through their provinces. It's sort of typically the same way in certain countries in Africa, too, like in Ghana where they have those regions, and each region has its own chieftain. Like in the Ashanti region, you got Osei-Tutu. So when you run through those provinces, you got to deal and negotiate with each one of those warlords. Now, I'm saying Joe Biden and Hunter may have had their hands in that to use Joe Biden's position. Hunter would have been doing some negotiations similar to how he done with the Ukraine and Burisma. And by the way, the Ukraine has a pipeline that runs partially out of the Caspian Sea. It's discontinued before it runs into the Black Sea, which you know is controlled by Russia. So it's all sorts of scenarios and theories. But the thing is that the United States trained 350,000 Afghan nationals. And they all were not Afghan nationals, as some of our military people reported. They knew they wasn't. They knew it was Taliban. And one telltale sign is they kept their beard. And a lot of people in Afghanistan cut their beards off and trying hastily to grow them back because that's a giveaway that you converted over to Christianity. Maybe. So it's a big mess. I've never seen a mess like this. These Democrats and this government that's ran by Joe Biden, who don't know what the hell he's doing. What did he learn after 47 some odd plus years in government? It sure is not playing out. And we got a big mess. All that equipment needs to be destroyed. I understand that some of the logistics and technology associated with it was, but I can't understand that much equipment going to 350,000 soldiers. You got enough equipment there to equip a small country. And it should never have been left there unless the circumstances was more controlled. And there had been warnings out to Gazoo. Even ISIS commandos warned of this recent attack that killed 13 U.S. soldiers and countless other people, including Americans. Americans should have been gotten out of there first under the suspicions of anonymity. They should have went to another airport and took them out a different way. Took them out to the Arabian Gulf and landed them on aircraft carriers. But going out through their national airport is kind of dumb, as we've seen. Totally fumbled. It reminds me of Jimmy Carter and Levian. Another mess. Anyway, I'll end with that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bianchi. We only have 10 minutes left, and so I want to make sure we get back to Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali. So We're going to keep going around, but I still want to invite anybody that's listening via the internet in the next 10 minutes. If you want to be heard, just call 657-383-0671. So we're going to go around the family room. Sheikh John Kennebec, would you like to make a closing comment on anything that you've heard or anything else that may come to your mind?
Well, I want to go back to Vietnam. This is a continuous situation. I don't know if you want to call it a blunder or what you call it. But in the height of the Vietnam era, two adversaries, you got the Viet Cong, you got South Vietnamese. Now, all that dissipated when the United States government left. Those people got together and had a record amount of peace. Of course, in that conflict, you had the Vietnamese, which was supported by the United States and other countries. So the Vietnamese people who worked with them, they were taken out of a situation where the Viet Cong wanted to seek revenge, so they was allowed to come to this country here. It's a very similar situation. It really, do the United States really have any business in these wars? You know, wasting all these resources that could be used better in this country, especially under social programs, which a lot of people want to contribute to, rather contribute to a situation that destroys lives, countries, communities, so forth and so on. You know, so I say it's not a Republican or Democrat issue. It occurs in all administrations. So it's something that has to do with the culture of the military industrial complex. There's the industrial with the money, and it's a situation that how can I say it's repeated. It's going to be repeated again. After Afghanistan, it'll be something else. And as far as leaving equipment, left equipment in Vietnam, left equipment in Iraq, same thing. You know, so it has to be a fundamental change in the leaders of the government in order to have a different value, human life. You know, of course, some people say they're pro-life, but then I even question that. But so I see pointing the finger, hypocrisy, and things of that nature that is going on here. And we've been there before. We had this problem before. It's just repetition, repeating it. That's the way I see it.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left, so I want to make one quick comment, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, and if you take no more than 3 minutes to do the extension of what you were speaking about, because I'm very much concerned, and I very much want you to speak about the issue that's been, in my opinion, grossly misrepresented concerning the Muslim and the Taliban approach to women's freedom. And I definitely want to hear your comment on that. I think you were heading that direction. But I want to say this very, very quickly. As a student of political history myself and a professor of American political history as well as world history, one thing I realized is that since the 1800s, America began to promote this idea of manifest destiny. And even though manifest destiny initially had to do with America's assertion that America should rule the Western Hemisphere, in other words, the islands of the Caribbean, North and South America, but it has spread to where America began to feel that they should actually have a very strong influence on the rest of the world, that the rest of the world should look to America as being the beacon of democracy and freedom. And so America felt that they had some, quote-unquote, God-given right to export their ideology of freedom and democracy throughout the world, even though America during that time had a large percentage of its population in chattel slavery, and even after slavery was over, continued to repress a large population of its people, namely the African-American people, but also the American Indians as well. But the point of it is that underlies a lot of the things that America has done, even including our desire to control the government and the life of the people in South Vietnam during that period of our expansion of our military force. We had at some point in time over 500,000 soldiers and airmen over in South Vietnam, which was about 1/8 of our total armed forces, almost getting close to 1/6 of our total armed forces. And those that weren't over there were being trained to go over there in many cases or just coming back. So a large of our military, quote-unquote, industrial complex was devoted to trying to assert ourselves and to basically mold Vietnam into being a little American. It seems, although Joe Biden says it's not true, but I did hear otherwise from some other scholar, that that's what we were trying to do in Afghanistan, and that's also what we pretty well successfully accomplished in Germany after we defeated the Germans in World War II. So that seems to be our modus operandi, to be able to go into these different countries and to try to remake them. Unfortunately, the people over there, led by the Taliban and others, but most of the Taliban resisted us doing that. And as a result, over 2,500 Americans were killed trying to impose our way of life or our thinking in terms of government and culture on the Afghanis, until finally not only Joe Biden but Obama but also Trump said we need to get out of that endeavor. That wasn't a decision that Joe Biden made. That decision had been made by President Trump, and even Obama was of the opinion that we needed to start getting detached from that. Biden just went ahead and made it happen. And sure, the fallout is that we set ourselves up for failure because we did not understand that those people have a 1,400-year-old culture that resists what the American society, through the CIA, through the State Department, through the military, was trying to impose on them. Now, how they're going to work out their problem remains to be seen. They have a lot of things they need to work out. But one thing is for sure, at least in the next several decades, America's not going to have any say-so in how they work it out. And if that's a bad thing, we'll see. But this is something America has to come to grips with, is that these people are going to run their societies and run their countries the way that they want to, even though there may be a lot of trauma and drama involved. So I'll give the, if it's okay with you, Ms. Bianchi, I'll give the last 3 minutes, because we're 3 minutes away from the end of the show, to Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, because I didn't mean to speak so long, and I do need to stop at 9 o'clock.
Well, I was
going to
say
okay,
one thing. Yeah, I was going to say one thing. You have Afghanistanis that want to be westernized and want to be Christian. So that was supposed to have been worked out between the Taliban and that government. I'm not saying the United States has wanted to change them into any particular persuasion, but the same thing can be said here in the United States, where you got people, especially blacks, who want school choice with vouchers, and you have those others that don't want that, NAACP, your Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and other organizations, don't want black parents to be able to dictate where their children are educated and how they're educated, and they being able to take the money in order to pay for it because they're poor. Same thing. Go ahead, Jesus.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll just wrap this up because it's a real serious conversation here. But I totally empathize with President Biden's position on this, because they're in depth studies to find out that government that they were supporting was totally corrupt, and I think they said they had about $900 million. In a bank, and it was, and they found out it was being Karzai was protecting the appropriation of those $900 million of American money to make sure his cronies, it's like you mentioned, you said those Taliban are a bunch of warlords, but you got to understand when you use the word warlord, my grandfather, you know, he was considered to be unorthodox, but that's. He Prophet Muhammad himself can only be identified as a warlord himself. And the word terrorist, the word terrorist cannot even be used at the United Nations because America seems to be the biggest terrorist on the planet. Okay, so I mean, and then you can't lose sight of another factor. When they talk about was our mission completed? See, when Obama when he went in office, there was 1,500 drones. After the first year he was in office, there was 15,000 drones. Afghanistan was the biggest exporter of cheap heroin that wiped out a whole generation on the streets of London. So they went in there to stop that drug traffic, okay, and they made all kinds of concessions and deals with those drug lords that I know I've been over the last 5 years, you know, talking to partners of mine, and they made deals that if you take those proceeds from that drug traffic and put it in the American free trade system, we allow you to keep your $90-100 billion. And all of this is part of. See, America just knew that they what America is being just hoodwinked, just and completely constantly being hoodwinked. This country's been being hoodwinked time and time again. And what Korea, the defeat in Korea. Okay, the road of, the 30th parallel was challenged, you know, then they found out that, you know, that China wasn't going to stand for it, you know, then it rolled open to Vietnam, one war right behind the next, you know what I mean, and trying to prosecute the Western view and what is Western society, how unblemished is a Western society in terms of, you know, what it represents, okay, and all these freedoms that we embrace so, passionately, you know what I mean, the freedom to walk down the street with, you know, all the freedoms we embrace. I'm not going to get into that conversation, but I'm just going to leave it there and to let you know, stopping that drug traffic because that drug traffic was the background of that. And then again, the safe haven of those who brought those towers down. I mean, all of that. You know, I mean, are there going to be other safe havens? Are they trying? Then, as we were talking about originally, are they now trying to, you know, just, you know, become integrated into America? I think, you know, we don't know. You don't really know. Ever really know. Anyway. Thank you for entertaining my comments, and with that, I'll release the podium to
I thank you so much for your comments, all of you. It's that time. I do have to sign off at this time, so that I can go and do what I had told you I was going to do, which is make my evening prayer that I have to make very quickly. So I want to say to everyone, thank you so much. If you have anything you didn't get the chance to say, we'll make it possible next week at the beginning of the program that you can go ahead and pick up where you left off. There's going to be things happening in the next few days that will probably add more to maybe what you might have been thinking about saying. So hold on to it. We thank you all for being with us tonight, and we say, let's pray for the people down on the Gulf Coast and especially in the New Orleans area that some way, miraculously, however you want to put it, that the great brunt of this impending hurricane will be shifted so that they'll be spared. We certainly don't want to see another Katrina experience down in that area. So let's pray that something will happen to save them from that devastation that may be coming. Also, we want to say that we pray for all the families of the people that have died over the last few days in Afghanistan, both Americans and Afghanis. But with that said, I do have to sign off. So God bless you all. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Amen. Have a pleasant and safe rest of the weekend. Good night.